Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the Van Wee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here live as usual, as always, actually. And we have lines open for you. Area code 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. So gather your financial questions. There are so many things we can talk about. But unlike most shows, you get to choose what we will talk about because we are here live. Unlike most of the people who just record their shows and you listen to exactly what they want you to hear, good, bad, or indifferent. So if you'd like to take a little control, just pick up the phone, give us a call. It can be good news, bad news, talk about some bad advice you received in the past and what to do about it. Think about your own investments. Are you doing a good job with them? Would you hire yourself or would you like to talk to somebody else? Have you diversified your portfolios? There's so many questions. What if you're inheriting money? Things like that. You know, it's always a good idea to have a little planning done before you take too many actions on any front, and that's what we are here for. So we'll talk more and more about those things and others today. Quick note, if anybody out there has taken a trip out to the beaches lately, you've noticed there's quite a lot of trash sitting around, and not much of it has moved for the last 2 weeks.
That's in our neighborhood. They're actually doing a great
one
job
by
of
one. Neighborhoods
up.
Are coming up. You know what's holding it up?
I do not.
We need a signature from FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which is dragging its feet in areas like Jack's Beach, Ponte Vedra. Why? Darned if I know.
Because they're a federal government organization?
I think we're seeing a firsthand lesson here in the lack of benefits that stem from a large government. And it's getting to the point now where there are health hazards out there. Things are rotting. Things are smelling. And there, these piles of trash everywhere are creating havens for things like snakes. And I'm getting pretty tired of it. I think if all of you out at the beach or anybody who visits the beach and cares, if you would just simply pick up your phone and call your congressman or send an email or a fax to your senators and say, hey, remember George Bush when he said, I think Brownie's doing a great job at FEMA right after Katrina? Well, I think we just found Brownie's equal. Let's get this done, people. I'm getting tired of it. Lawns are just one thing that are being destroyed. All right. See, it didn't take me long to get onto my rants today, did it?
It sure didn't.
You think I'm done?
I doubt it.
I doubt it seriously. Anyway, we are nonetheless a financial show, and we stick pretty much to it. Only once in a while do your finances and your investments encounter political obstacles or, worse yet, assistance. I hate it when they try to help. So we'll talk about that and what you can do about it. You got to be your own investor nowadays, folks. You can't depend on anybody else anymore, and you got to know a little bit about what you're doing, even if that only extends to who should I talk to get some help, and we'll talk a little bit more about how you can do that too. But let's wrap up. We had another week in what I read this morning on a very clever statement, I thought. Another week in the zombie market, where it wanders around aimlessly, has no direction, no interest, and nothing ever happens.
That pretty much sums it up.
It does. If you're going to sleep listening to the market rap, you're in good company.
If you remember way back to July when the Brexit mess happened and that vote went the way that they did not expect it to go, and the market dropped like a rock right after that for I'm not really sure why, and no one else is really either, because it rebounded within a few days, which was some serious volatility, but
it's
all came
herd
back.
Mentality.
Exactly. Since then, the S&P has been trading in the 100-point range between 2100 and 2200. In the past few weeks, that has narrowed in even further, with the S&P hovering around the 2150 mark, and we don't really have any signs that it's going to break out in either direction right now. The only index that seems to have any sort of positive momentum right now is the NASDAQ, and even that's a little suspect.
But it had a pretty good week.
Yeah, well, okay week. It's just a really tough time to make money in the market right now, and I think most of the problem is caused by the uncertainty surrounding the market. You've got the looming election, the potential rate hikes in December, the lack of sales growth from corporate America, the fact that companies are trading at the high end of fair valuations, and the difficulty of finding yield in a zero interest rate environment. And I think all of that is just confusing investors as to what to do next. So a lot of people are just in a sit and wait, let's see what happens mode. And hence the market just isn't doing anything. So despite the pretty negative feel for the week, all three major indexes posted slight gains. The NASDAQ was the clear winner, gaining 0.8%, while the Dow was almost flat and the S&P gained 0.4%. For the year, all three are up between 4 and 5%, but negative on month to date. The earnings data that has been released so far has been improving, with 68% of companies now beating their consensus estimates on earnings and 58% beating on revenue.
Those are pretty good numbers before you factor in where they were a week ago,
right.
And they're very good numbers after you factor that in.
Both of those are actually better than the previous four quarters, and in the case of the earnings number, it's actually the best we've seen since 2009. Of course, there's still a long ways to go, and those numbers may not hold. Next week, we'll see reports from companies like Kimberly-Clark, Visa, Caterpillar, GM, and Procter & Gamble. So it'll be a busy week and a lot of data coming out. The market's going to react.
Also remember that it's based on diminished expectations.
Well, yes, but that you can always say that.
Yes.
So the expectations are what they are, and what happens is going to affect what happens in the market. The economic data this week was somewhat negative, with six reports missing their consensus estimates and only three beating. Five reports met their expectations or had no estimate. Some of the interesting ones were industrial production increased by 0.1%, which was in line with expectations. However, the trend is still negative and has been for over a year, which is not a great sign. But energy accounts for a lot of that, which is not too surprising. The CPI report this month was also in line at 0.3, up from last month, but the trend is now decidedly up. The year-over-year number is now at 1.5%, up from 0% to slightly negative in early 2015. At 1.5%, the Fed has an excuse to not raise rates, so that makes an argument for no hike in December, which would be good news for the market. And then the Atlanta Fed actually showed that the median wage growth was up 4.2%, and so not bad news for workers out there.
Finally.
But that is also going to drive inflation, which, again, could cause the Fed to raise.
Yay.
So bad for
the
market.
See, I can argue any side
of
any of these.
It's so confusing right now. And then there was some housing information released this week, and it was all kind of mixed. Housing starts missed, but building permits beat. So overall, I still think we're in a pretty healthy housing market.
After the break, I'm going to tell you why the market is going to go up the balance of this year. And I am so confident. You won't believe it.
Really?
Yep. Adam has a trivia question, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888.
All right. What interest rate on a 30-year mortgage will cause you to pay almost the exact same amount of in interest as you will in principal over the life of that mortgage? And we're looking forward to the, with plus or minus 0.1%.
I'll give you a range. It's more than zero, and it's less than 12.
All right.
Now, that's really narrowed it down, don't you think? All right, don't go anywhere. We've got to take a little break, and we'll be back right after. I'll wrap up the market wrap. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
I had just a couple more wrap-up comments regarding the market. I have dubbed this market the hurry-up-and-wait market because everybody seems to be anticipating a large number of events, and as soon as one takes place, another one takes its place, looking forward, so nobody's willing to do anything. But I'm going to tell you why it's going to go up, and it's really simple. It's going to go up because people think it's going to go down.
Well, yeah, that's usually a reason that I would agree with.
And if you want some proof of that, the bullish sentiment is down again. For 51 weeks, it's been under 40%. That means less than 2 out of 5 people think the market's going up. In the past week, bearish sentiment, that which says it's going to go down, is up 6%. That is almost a slam dunk guarantee that the market's going up. The more negative people are feeling, the better chance we have. And if you want to look back in recent history and see an example of this, look at the January 1st through February 13th period, where it dropped huge, and what it's done since then. The last time the bearish sentiment was this strong and the bullish sentiment this week was right at that turnaround time. This, if this doesn't do it, I'll apologize. And I don't intend to apologize.
Well, I hope you're right.
But I would. I just hope I'm right, too. Plus, I think that there's a very good chance that the market will love the fact that it's going to be harder and harder for the Fed to raise the interest rate. As you all know, regular listeners, Adam and I still wish rates would go up. But if you're strictly looking at what's good for the market, a non-increase would be enjoyed for a while longer. We know they're coming. I'd get it over with. All right, Adam's trivia question for the week. What interest rate to the nearest up or down tenth of a point is that rate at which over the life of your 30-year mortgage you would pay approximately equal amounts of interest and principal? You always hear you get this mortgage and you're going to pay 2.5 times more in for the mortgage than the value of it because you're going to pay a lot more in interest. Well, that's not always true. It depends on the rate of your mortgage. So that is the question for today. All right, carry on. Tell them who we are first.
And then sure. Carry on. So we are fee-only financial planners based out in Jacksonville Beach. We're right off of Butler Boulevard, so we're easy to get to from all points in the city. And if you ever want to reach us, you can call the office at 904-685-1505. Or you can find us online at www.vanweefinancial.com. On our website, you can book a meeting with us right from the website, or you can check out our blog or our Twitter feed. We do a lot of stuff on there, and we post new blog topics. We try and do twice a week. All of our podcasts of this radio show are available commercial-free right on our webpage. So if you miss a show, I hope you don't, but if you do, just go to the website and hit play, and you can hear what you missed.
How about that? All right. A couple of bad headlines. You know how much I love bad headlines.
I know you do.
Paul Ryan says you must take advantage of this $4,000 mortgage rebate program.
Mortgage rebate program? That sounds great.
Oh, I pay a mortgage. Can I just hold up my hand and get a rebate?
Yeah.
No. Not happening.
What is it?
It's HARP. Oh. The Home Affordable Refinance Program is scheduled to end at the end of this year. A, it might. 2, I doubt it.
Yeah, they'll extend
3, it. 3, Paul Ryan has nothing to do with this, and it's not a rebate, people.
No,
don't listen to this stuff.
It actually costs you money to do the refinance under HARP, just like it would under any other program.
Exactly. All right, how about this one from the headlines this week? There is a secret calendar that tells you how to make money investing, and it's worked for hundreds of years.
That's fantastic.
I promise you, if there were a secret calendar about how to make money, I would know it. You would know it. And all of you would know it, too, because it wouldn't be a secret anymore.
Especially when you're writing website articles about it.
Who and what always comes down to one thing. You can buy my newsletter for this amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
When you read these things, understand what you're reading and why you're reading it. They're selling you something. It is no different than the people out there talking about how your investments only go up, never down. Our clients lost no money, on and on and on. Those are annuity salespeople. Just that simple. Always consider the source of what you're hearing or reading. And if you don't understand the source, pick up the phone, dial 222-8255. That's 222-TALK, and ask us. And if we don't know, we'll take a wild guess with an affirmation the next week. I promise. Okay. What you got?
All right. We had a listener email come in, and they wanted to know if we like the dogs of the Dow strategy, and also if there was a way to incorporate it into an asset allocation via mutual fund. So if you don't know what the dogs of the Dow is, it is the highest yielding stocks in the 30 stocks that make up the Dow Jones industrial average. So it is typically companies that are established, large cap, pay a good dividend, haven't seen the best performance, hence their dividend yield is higher. And because they've underperformed, the theory is that they will, that they might overperform in the near future. So people who use this strategy are looking for undervalued value stocks. And the fact is, we do like that strategy. We use something very similar in SDOG, which is an ETF. It's SDOG. And it actually does the same theory, but it applies it to all of the sectors in the S&P 500. And the reason we like that better is that when you're only dealing with a subset of 30 stocks, you just don't get as enough diversification for what we like to do. When you look at the S&P 500, you automatically have a ton more stocks to diversify into, and therefore we like that strategy better. And I think we have a phone call.
Well, you are absolutely right. Good morning, Dan.
I have an answer for the trivia question.
Please do.
2.4%.
Sorry, that is a little low.
You're in the right part of the ballpark, but you're just a little bit low.
Yep, good guess there.
Tried the rule of 72, didn't work.
I like the thinking.
You got to consider the shape of the curve, which is not a straight line. That's the problem, I think. Okay, anything else we can help you with today?
That's it. Thank you much.
All right, thank you. Appreciate the call. All right, we now have a bottom limit that's bigger than zero.
Yeah, you know, that was a good guess, though, because you do hear that you pay 2.5 times, so you would think that rate would be really low, like in the twos, but it turns out it isn't. So.
And for those of you who don't understand the rule of 72, the rule of 72 simply says that if you multiply an interest rate by a number of years and it comes out 72, that is what will double your money. So he's thinking about it in an inverse and how that's going to cut your money in half or have 50-50. It's a parabolic thing. That's why it's off a little bit from there, but a really, really good idea based on a really good methodology, I think. It just was wrong.
Yep, good guess, though.
Strangely enough, but we appreciate it.
So back to the dogs of the Dow and SDOG. So we use the SDOG ETF, and it's performed quite well for us over the last few years. The 3-year annualized return, when I looked this up, was over 11%. So not bad. I looked into the mutual fund part of it, and one that the listener brought up was HDOGX, and it's a fund by Hennessy, which is a company we actually like
them.
And use some of their funds. However, half of this fund's assets are in U.S. Treasuries, which basically dilutes the strategy by 50% right
now
off the bat.
Now it becomes an asset allocation fund.
Right. So you're buying basically 10 stocks, and then the rest is U.S. Treasuries. Now, the performance has actually been quite good, but I think that if you're trying to use the dogs of the Dow strategy, you're better off not diluting it with Treasuries and just doing that strategy. So you can actually buy those 10 stocks on your own and kind of make your own asset allocation into it for with a portion of your portfolio. And it's just made up of Caterpillar, IBM, Exxon, Chevron, Verizon, Pfizer, Merck, Cisco, P&G, and Boeing. So if you were to go buy those 10 stocks, you'd essentially be executing the dogs of the Dow strategy. You're just going to have to rebalance it at least annually and make sure that sometimes the companies move out of the dogs of the Dow and another one moves in, and you would just replace that one as it happened.
And recapping that, you still are considerably under-diversified if you buy in 10 individual stocks, I believe.
Yeah, that should just be one portion of your portfolio.
And you're going to incur more trading costs if you use that than you would by buying something like SDAG.
Correct, but SDAG isn't going to give you the same thing. If that's what you want to achieve, I would say, you know, pay the $90 in trading costs and just execute it on your own.
You could easily do that. It would take a little bit of money to make that strategy worth anything.
Yeah.
Because that $90 has to become insignificant in the overall. But I do like it. It's a dividend play. And over time, dividends are wonderful. In fact, there are advertisements that are misleading about that kind of thing all over the place, including the one that says you're piggybacking off of the Canadian Social Security system. Right. I've seen that over and over, and we've talked about it over and over.
One other thing to consider is that the mutual fund has an expense ratio of 1.08%, while the ETF SDAG only charges 0.4%. Yeah. So another thing to consider.
And the performance this year has been absolutely out of this world. All right, we're going to have to take another break. The trivia question is still out there. What is the interest rate at which you pay equal amounts over the life of the 30-year mortgage in principal and interest? We know that it's less than 12, and we know that it's above 2.4. So just pick up the phone. Lines are open, 222-8255. We have to take a hard break, and we'll be back right after. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
This segment is sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. Maybe you got things all cleaned up now, and maybe it wasn't left so well, whether it's maintenance or projects. He's your guy. Give him a call. Also, trivia question still out there. What interest rate that's greater than 2.4 and less than 12 will cause you over a 30-year mortgage to pay equal amounts of principal and interest, and will take it to the nearest tenth up or down? So you've got a little tiny window and a little tiny number, and you can call us and give us a guess, 222-8255. All right, I got another stupid headline type thing that I'm reaching a little bit into the political realm here, but it's how the politicians deal with your finances, so it directly impacts you. This one is a Yahoo-sponsored article. It says the Trump tax plan seen adding jobs, then costing them in the long term. Now, I hate doing numbers on the radio because they're hard to follow, so I'm going to try to make this real simple. This is from the Brookings Institute, which is in Hillary Clinton's back pocket. They're so far left, they literally can't see anybody even back to the middle. They're saying that Trump would create jobs, 1.7 million jobs, in 2018. Now, that's right around the corner, folks. He doesn't get inaugurated until early 18, and it takes about a year to kick in. So they're probably right. They also say by 2027, he would create 692,000 fewer jobs. Now, any economic forecast that's out more than about 3 years is, let's say, lacking in credibility, to say the least, which is why Congress always does a 10-year budget, because they throw everything in years 9 and 10, and then they never live up to it. But 2027 is 10 years away, folks. They also say by 2040, his plan would mean 11 million fewer jobs. Now, 2040 and 2017, that kind of passes my two, three, four-year limit. They also say Clinton's plan would drop 282,000 jobs by 2018, but then create 645,000 by 2027. Well, that's 10 years, so that's 64,000. That's less than we do now, people. Now, it also says by 2040, 23 years out, her plan would create 2 million jobs. We're creating jobs at 150,000 a month right now. That's 2 million a year. So she's going to slow that down by a factor of 23. And this is touted as a reason to vote for her.
That makes sense.
Is it me? I don't know. I personally think the only way we're going to save Social Security is to get more people to work.
Well, legal immigration would be a good way to do it.
Yeah, but they have to work and they have to pay. I've got a thing about that I'm going to do in a little bit. All right, you want to talk a little bit about year-end planning?
Yeah, it is coming up on year end. It's hard to believe, but we are almost at the end of 2016, and we're actually even almost a month into the fourth quarter. Where did it go? So there's a few things that we need to think about financially around this time of year, some more than others, depending on your age. The first and most important is that if you are over 70 and a half, or will be by the end of the year, you really need to start thinking about your RMDs, or required minimum distributions, out of your tax-deferred retirement accounts. There's a simple formula that you can use to calculate your RMD, or most custodians will do it for you, but you should try and double-check that and make sure that they're on top of it, because not all of them are. If they don't calculate it for you, you can just go to, there's an IRS site that will give you the formula, and for once, it's actually a pretty easy to understand site on the IRS website, because everything else they do is confusing as it could be, but this one's pretty simple. In the most simple terms, it's just your balance at the beginning of the year divided by a factor that is based on your age. And you have to take it by the end of the year. It is not one of those things like IRA deposits that you can take up until tax time. So get on it soon. Speaking of taxes, take a look at any taxable trading accounts you have and plan for some tax loss harvesting. Tax loss harvesting simply means that you are selling any investments that you may have that lost money during the year and using those losses to offset any capital gains you may have incurred during the year. For those of you that are having a year where you didn't see much income, think about selling off any appreciated investments to take advantage of the low capital gains rates for lower income brackets. For instance, if you are single and your income will be less than $37,650 in 2016, you will pay zero in capital gains taxes. If you are married and filing jointly, that income limit is $75,300. Make sure you don't buy the same security for 30 days after you sell it, and then that capital gain will never be taxed if you're in those tax brackets, which is nice, free money. Mm-hmm. With a little less than 3 months left in the year, you may still have time to sock away more money into your 401k at work if you can spare it. For instance, if you make $100,000 per year and are contributing 6% right now, you're on track to save $6,000 in your 401k this year, not including any company match or anything like that. However, if you act quickly and change your withholding to 20% for November and December, you could save a total of $8,800 for the year. You can always take that back down to 6% in January, or better yet, notch it up 1% to 7% for 2017. Every dollar you save now will be theoretically worth more in retirement than a dollar that you save later in your career. And lastly, think about putting together that budget you've been putting off forever. This time of year tends to get very expensive for a lot of people, and no one wants to go into the new year in debt. Making a month-by-month budget through next December is a great way to avoid credit card debt. If that is too much for you, like it is for many people, simply make a holiday budget. Figure out where the money for Christmas presents is going to come from and decide where to cut back on your expenses for the next couple of months. Maybe you can eat out less a couple times per month or rent a movie instead of going to the movies. For a family of four, that can be a savings of $50 to $80 or more going to the movies.
Yeah, restaurants are crowded this time of year anyway.
Going to the new year without holiday debt is a great way to keep yourself on the road to financial independence. So I'm going to revisit this article in December just to make sure everyone's done all of this. But it's just little things that make a big difference in your financial plan.
We're going to actually try to devote an entire show to this topic. I've been twisting the arm off my CPA, trying to get her to come on with us. I think I've probably guilted her into it by now. And there are a lot of things that you can do and a lot of things you should do. Some of you know, I believe, that last year, toward the end of the year, unlike years in the past where Congress extended a bunch of tax provisions just for 1 year, a lot of those were actually made permanent last year. So if you do itemize your taxes, there are things you really should know, not the least of which is that the sales tax deduction now is permanent for residents of places who do not have a sales or an income tax like Florida. And that's especially important if you're going to do something like buy a new car, and you can actually shove that expense of the sales tax on the car into the current year and save yourself some taxes immediately. So those of you who are not familiar with your own taxes, now is the time that you got to pull out your return for 2015 and take a good look at it. Did you itemize or not? Did you have loss carry forwards from your investments or not? Do you think you should itemize this year? Are you close? Did you deduct sales tax? Any of those things are important, and we'll try to cover them, and I'll do some tips on the website, too, for the next few weeks. There is no reason on God's green earth for you to pay one penny more in taxes than you have to. The law is there. There is no such thing as a loophole in tax law. It's called the tax code, and it's 72,000 pages long. So if you don't really understand it very well, don't be surprised. But the good news for most of us is that the bulk of that does not apply to us in any way, shape, or form. The rules for an individual are very, very simple. Most people hate it so much they just will not take the time to go out and learn what they could do to help themselves. And there is a lot, and a lot of it goes right in your investment accounts. All right, we're going to have to take our final break. When we come back, I'm going to do a little muse about Social Security. And I want everybody to think about if this applies to them or if it applies to anybody they know. But we have a serious problem in this country, and I frankly don't have all of the answers to it, but I at least have the identification of it. We all know it's in trouble. We're getting a whopping, 0.3% now increase first of the year, which means the average person will get a $5 raise. The average couple will get a $6 raise, and they're going to raise Medicare by that much or more. So we're all going to take it on the chin once again. If you don't need any more reasons to take care of yourself, use that one. All right, we'll be right back after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the final segment of the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Trivia questions still sitting out there, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. It is, what mortgage rate would you have to get in order for your 30-year mortgage to have about the same payment for principal as interest over the life of the mortgage? We know that 2.4 is low. We know that 12 is high, so it's somewhere in there, and pretty easy just to guess. Even if you don't get it right, you might.
Yeah,
had some good guesses over the weeks and weeks here.
Could win a Publix gift card.
All right. I want to see if you know this person. I call this, but no one told me. And this is part of what's wrong with the Social Security system. Social Security has a problem, and we know it has a problem. I think there's a call coming in right now, so I'm not going to start this until after. Yeah, we got it. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, gentlemen. Very quickly, 5.8%.
Ooh, you're close, but no.
That's sorry. A little high, but you sure made a bracket out of it.
Ooh, right. The Chinese math didn't work.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's better just to guess.
Okay, appreciate it, gentlemen.
Thanks, Larry. All right, the Social Security system as we know it right now is certainly headed for financial ruin because payouts are exceeding contributions year after year, and there is no trust fund. It has been borrowed and spent. There are only now IOUs, and they're shrinking fast. There are a lot of reasons for this, but one of them is that not everybody paid into it. And I'm going to describe this as if it were me or someone like you or someone you know. I'm sure this happens all the time. I woke up this morning, looked in the mirror, and staring back at me was a 65-year-old face. How did that happen? It wasn't long ago I was young. What's it going to be like next year? Every morning for the last 10 or 15 years, some part of me hurt, new and different from yesterday's pains, but I shrugged it off, went to the job site, and did my usual thing. Many years ago, my buddies and I did day labor while we developed job skills. And we started getting good at things, and we all specialized and took on small jobs. We did a darn good job, and a lot of it was paid in cash. We did everything from framing to trimming, electrical odd jobs, steadily picked up a flow of cash. There's that magic word, cash. Who wouldn't want to work for cash? No taxes. I'm off the radar, and cash is easily spendable. I have everything a guy could want, right? As time went by, we did more and more jobs off the books. No government involvement, no IRS making cuts in take-home pay. We had it made. Customers loved the cash discounts. For decades it lasted, and time just kind of slid by effortlessly. Now I'm older and tired. My aches and pains are worse. Bending over hurts, and lifting any significant weight is excruciating. But I have no money. I have no pension. I have no retirement savings. So when I applied for Medicare, they told me at the Social Security office I hadn't qualified. Not enough quarters worked. Not enough money paid into the system. But I did work a lot, I explained, and they responded that they have no record of my life's employment. Naturally, right? Because I was paid in cash, and I spent it. I spent all of it. I should have saved some. What about my retirement income for life? That's supposed to be Social Security, right? They told me, you're not qualified. I was not qualified according to their rules. I didn't report earnings for the requisite 40 quarters over my lifetime because I worked mostly for cash. But I raised two kids, and my wife and I always put food on the table. What's wrong with that? Taxes. Payroll taxes, they say. But I didn't have a payroll job, I explained. So I didn't pay into the system. Not my problem, they said. What a response that is. What do I do? I can't lift tiles forever. I can't mix mortar. Can't mix grout. Pounding nails is difficult, and I'm certainly not qualified to do a desk job. My body hurts. Now my mind is catching up with my body and getting slower. Which hurts more? I can't say right now. I feel so alone. But I know I'm not alone. All the guys work like I did. Cash at the end of the day. Pick up a six-pack on the way home. Wife, kids always had food on the table from yesterday's cash. All was well, and we all did the same thing. But now I'm tired. Oh, so tired, and I hurt every day. I can't do this forever. I feel so alone. I have financial obligations, obligations to myself, to my wife, to my kids, for the rest of our lives. But I have nothing left except my diminishing capacity to earn the next dollar. I was raised too proud to take welfare. Even when we used to call it public assistance, he had to whisper it in polite company. I am so screwed. Nobody told me this would be the end result. Why? Do you know that person? Are you that person? Millions of Americans lament this fate every day. 10,000 of us a day are turning 65. They echo the litany. They live the despair. Who's to blame? What will society do? I don't have a single answer. I don't even have all the other answers. And while there's widespread agreement that the problem exists, there is equally widespread disagreement on the basic answers. Who's responsible for this financial mess? Who's responsible for the propagation of this condition? What can be done? What should be done? What will it cost? Who will pay? Is it fair? This dilemma has had me concerned for decades, and I thank God and my parents that I was not caught up in the financial death spiral of going nowhere by living day to day off the grid. Does it bother me that I don't feel terribly guilty? A little, but it isn't exactly true. I do feel compassion, but only as a cog in the society that created the monster. For decades, I've paid and paid and paid into the system, and the system is nearly broke, but I'm getting paid back, unlike a lot of people. While the problem was festering, it was easy to generally ignore this mounting problem, but it is quickly becoming more visible and therefore harder to ignore. Now, on the brighter side, the working age population's shrinkage is actually starting to reverse as the very large millennial generation is paying into the system now, to someday support the much smaller Gen X. A quicker and better fix would be to stimulate the number of payroll jobs with higher incomes. That would require a new and improved public policy. I really hate presenting a serious problem like this without much in the way of answers, but we need to think very seriously as a country about how many jobs there are in this country, what kind of jobs they are, what direction we're going, and whether or not we need to change that direction. And that's my two cents.
To make it even scarier, do you know what the fastest rising population in terms of age is in this country right now?
100 up.
80 plus. Mm-hmm. So people are living, I mean, your retirement can last for 30 years now, and if you're not prepared to pay yourself during that entire time, you could very well be looking at a time where you're either on just Social Security, which is not a lot of money, or for those of you that do work off-the-grid jobs, as we call them, you could be looking at nothing, or Social Security disability or welfare.
Yeah, and disability being worked into the system a few years ago is the cause, large cause, of the system as we know it going bankrupt. I don't know exactly what to do about it. It would require massive tax increases. It would require massive new jobs. Can you grow your way out of the problem? Well, those of you old enough to remember Ronald Reagan said we can grow our way as an economy into better times. In the short run, sure, it hurts. It absolutely hurts. cut taxes, more revenue is generated. I've got a whole piece on that I'll do one of these days. It works every single time it's tried. We're now faced politically with a very, very serious choice. One choice is raise taxes on the rich. The other one is cut taxes for everybody. I know what works, and I know what I'm going to do. What you do, I'm not going to tell you. You can listen to 5 days a week, 6 days a week, or 7 days a week of political experts telling you exactly what's right and what's wrong, what to do, or else. That's not me. I'm just going to tell you what I know works. I'm going to tell you what the problems are, and I'm going to hope everybody does the right thing. But the number one thing that people have to do is take care of themselves. Pay yourself first, and that is exactly why we are in this business, and that is exactly why we come here every Saturday morning and talk to all of you.
Absolutely right.
So give us a call at the office, 904-685-1505. Appointments are free if you want to come in and talk. And the,
so
trivia,
the trivia question,
he's got a little bit more than just
the
a
rate
pure answer.
On a 30-year mortgage that will cause you to pay almost the exact same amount of interest as you do principal over the life of the mortgage is 5.3%. The good news is, right now, mortgage rates are in the mid-threes, so you can pay a lot less than you pay in lot less interest than you pay in principal over the life of your mortgage if you act now. Also interesting, the interest rate that you would have to pay double the amount of interest that you do principal on a mortgage is 9.4%. And on the other side of that, if you want to pay half the amount, it's 2.9%.
Can I choose?
You can choose to some degree. You can choose to get a 15-year fixed or a 30-year fixed. Right now, a 15-year fixed, you might get 2.9.
Yeah, that's true. It's a great time to refi, as the real estate people were saying before us. If you're thinking of buying or selling, do it. We'll be here next week, as always. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Thanks for being with us.